Okay, here we go, fellas. They call this a cold opening. If you live in Edmonton, okay, this is definitely a very apropos opening. There's about 9 feet of snow on the ground. Boy. Kev, are you ready for winter?
Well, I don't know if you have a choice, Jimmy, but it's as soon as the shovels come out, it's time to start shoveling, and that's cold winter in Alberta, and it's here.
Don't complain, because if you're in the West Coast right now, if you haven't got a rowboat, you're in trouble.
Yeah, of course, it's not very good out there, Warren. But you weren't affected. You're going to be okay, but there's tons of power, that went out there.
I'm high and dry here. It's pretty much east of me where all the damage is being done down in the Fraser Valley and up into the Coquihalla. So it was a rough one.
Well, maybe this will be a good distraction. Everyone, we can talk a little curling. Let's do that right now.
Last rock, eighth end, up by two.
I don't think I'm white.
I don't think you are either.
Oh,
it's clean. Don't kill it, Ben.
Line's really good. Right on the button, guys. Right
last here, stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The sweepers are watching it. Fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out as a champion. Cuts him to one. He will win his final Grand Slam, taking the Players' Championship. Talk about putting an exclamation mark at the end of a career. All he had to do was cut him down. Kevin Martin can celebrate. He is a champion.
Well, welcome everybody to another show of the new season of Inside Curling. This is actually show number 6. We want to thank our sponsors, Goldline Sports Interaction, Coyote Tractor, Nestle Boost, and Meridian Manufacturing. What's on the show today? We got the Asia Pacific Championship. They were in Kazakhstan this past week. Warren, you're going to give us an update there, as well as the Canadian Mixed Championships is in the books. Kevin, you're Omaha, Nebraska guy. The U.S. Olympic trials are taking place. We want to hear from you on that. Kev, Stu Sells Halifax Classic ended on Sunday, Warren. You're going to give us an update there. Congrats to curling.com for doing an amazing job there of the video. You're going to see more and more of them. Also, one of our sponsors, Sports Interaction, has set up some odds for the Olympic trials. I love the action, Kev. Okay, and there's we're going to review all that and get your guys' picks. Hot Rock Topics. Carrie Gillespie from the Toronto Star wrote a piece titled, "The Three Pillars of Canadian Curling Are Wobbling. It Might Be Time to Rock the Boat." We've got some interesting comments from our email. And in the house, Kathy Overton, Kathy O, as she's known. Everyone thinks of, you know, decorated curlers from Manitoba being Jennifer Jones. But boy, if you look at what she's done, the accolades are through the roof. And we're going to do an interview with her. And, of course, our emails. Thanks, everyone, for sending us those. We love to hear from you. So let's get going with it. We want to know what's happening around the curling world. A bunch of stuff that we got to update you on. It's brought to you by Sports Interaction, providing competitive odds on all sports. Sports Interaction is Canada's odds maker. You got to be 19, of course, and we want you to play responsibly. Okay, Hanson, the Asia Pacific Championships. Bring us up to date.
Yes, it wound up this past weekend, and in the women's side, Japan defeated Korea 6-5 to win the Asia-Pacific title for 2021 and a spot to the Women's Worlds in Prince George next March. The losing Korean team will also have a berth in the Women's Worlds. In addition, the bronze medal-winning team from Kazakhstan and the fourth-place finishers from Hong Kong have earned a spot in the final qualification event for 2022. It'll be held in Finland in January. On the men's side, Korea won the gold medal in the berth to the men's worlds in Las Vegas in the first week of April by defeating Japan 9-5. In the men's competition, the silver medalist Japanese team, along with Chinese Taipei, have also secured a spot in the world qualification event in January. So that concludes the Asia Pacific Championship. Starting this week, another championship that's going to determine teams for the next year's worlds, the European Championship in Lillehammer, Norway. And that'll start this Saturday, the 20th. There's 26 nations involved. The top 7 from the men's side and the top 7 from the women's side will also have a berth in the men's and women's worlds in 2022.
I saw Jamie Cooey Did a little post on Facebook saying he had a great run at the Canadian Mixed Championships. He for sure must have been a front runner, but didn't win it. Warren, what happened there? What were the final results?
Jamie came very close. He was in the semifinals, and in the semifinal round, he played a tough competitor, Jean-Michel Menard from Quebec, and he lost that semifinal 6-4. In the other semi, James Grattan of New Brunswick was playing Michael McLean of Ontario, and again, by the same 6-4 score, McLean was the victor. In the final, Menard came up the winner 5-4 over McLean, and in the bronze medal game, Cooey for Northwest Territories defeated New Brunswick's Grattan. So Cooey did get the bronze medal. Jean-Michel Menard, certainly a name we've heard many times in the curling world. He actually won the mixed before, but way back in 2001. And as everybody knows, he was a winner of the Brier for Quebec in 2006. Only one of the two titles Quebec has ever had at the Brier. Playing with Menard was some familiar names as well, Marie-France Larouche and Annie LeMay, that were prominent in the women's curling scene for many years, represented Quebec at the Scotties many times, and at second Ian Belleau. It was only the third time in the history of the mixed championship, that goes back to 1965, that Quebec was the winner, and that team will now represent Canada at the World Mixed in October in Aberdeen, Scotland.
He won that in 06. I was there. That was in Winnipeg, I believe, Warren, when he won
Regina.
The... Where did he go all these years, Kev, or Warren? Did he step away from curling and now he's back?
No, he was around. I believe, Kevin, you correct me, I think he was in the Final Four in Kamloops in 2014. I'm not sure. I think he finished third there. Could be wrong, but he was close.
Yeah, no, Jean-Michel, he's still around and still curling really well. It's just never spent as much time traveling on the tour as kind of needed. Kind of like McCarville from Northern Ontario. Same kind of thing. You know, a really, really good curler, but just hasn't put in the time on the tour. And as you can see, the separation between the top few and then the next bunch and Jean-Michel, just simply because of lack of time or whatever the case may be, just hasn't played enough to be able to stay in there with the rest of the top of the pack.
Well, congratulations to him. You know, when you talk about Olympic trials, Kevin, it seems, you know, that they're always saying, okay, the Olympic trials, they start talking about it the minute the Olympics end about new trials. And you hear this going on for months and months and months about who's going to qualify for it, how they're going to do it. There's so many different ways now to get into the Olympics. The U.S. is no exception, Kev. The moment is now in Omaha, Nebraska. The U.S. Olympic trials are underway. Give us your take on all of that, Kev.
Well, yeah, the Olympic trials are actually, yeah, in Omaha, Nebraska, and they're about, about halfway through. John Schuster, let's go on the men's side first. You got John Schuster pulling ahead of the pack. He's at 6-0, and as we sit right now, he's playing Rich Runin halfway through the game, and they're up 5-2. So if that score holds, you're going to see Schuster at 7-0. And then Greg Persinger, actually, is at 4-2. Corey Dropkin, who I thought would end up in second place behind Schuster, is at 3-3. But as it stands right now, in the middle of the game, it's 6-1 Dropkin over Persinger. So if that holds true for the rest of the game, you're going to see two teams tied at 4-3 with Rich Runin losing to Schuster, if that happens, down to 3-4. So things are starting to kind of open up on the men's side with John Schuster, and no surprise, of course, the reigning Olympic champion leading the way. On the women's side, once again, Tabitha Peterson leading the way. Corey Christensen at 4-2 in second place, Tabitha at 5-1. Kim Rhyme and Jamie Sinclair both at 3-3. Madison Bear 2-4, and then Delaney Strauss at 1-5. The game, so I want everybody to pay attention to this evening. Corey Christensen is playing Tabitha Peterson this evening. So if Christensen could win that game, it would put both teams at 5 wins and 2 losses at the top of the pack. The next game to pay attention to, in my opinion, is Wednesday afternoon. Tabitha playing Jamie Sinclair. That's a big game. That will be a game where probably Jamie needs to win it to be able to stay in the hunt for a playoff spot. And then Thursday morning, if Jamie can manage to beat Peterson, then she plays Kim Rhyme Thursday morning at 9. And that game could probably be for that second playoff spot. So I'll tell you what, it's really exciting in Omaha as to where things are falling. And but no big surprise, though, the top two teams right now, John Schuster and Tabitha Peterson.
Olympic curling, Kev, when you started, of course, you won in 2010. did you ever think it would get to a spot where it would be so competitive that these teams in the U.S. would start to really show up at a lot of these events? I mean, it's been around for a while now, but probably wasn't the case when you were in your prime. But now, Kev, big teams.
The whole idea of even back going back to the start of the Grand Slam of curling idea was to bring curling worldwide, top teams playing against top teams, for the purpose of having parity around the globe. And that's exactly what we have happening now, and it's only going to get better, or whichever way you want to look at it. Depends whose eyes you're looking from behind. And from behind my eyes, I love it. The game worldwide is becoming so equal that you don't really know who's going to win or lose. So no, it's not a big surprise to me. It's great that it's happening, and you bet there's a lot of really strong teams. Warren, one thing with the Olympic trials in the States and on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the playoffs, and the final isn't a sudden death game, which has always been the case in curling, I think, but it's a best of three in both the women's and the men's sides. And I love that idea on Olympic trials, because you want your best rep, in my opinion, your best chance at getting on the podium, and playing a best of three has to increase your chances. But Warren, your thoughts on the playoff structure being a best of three to finish off the Olympic trials in the States?
I find it interesting, because that's been certainly a danger with the broadcast world, and the fact that there's a third game there that you don't know if it's going to happen or if it isn't. So you've got to schedule it. You've got to position airtime around it. And if all of a sudden that game disappears, there's a huge hole to be filled. So major league sports have been able to do that because of their power, their strength, and the money involved. But I'm kind of surprised that NBC has agreed to this format. I think, as you suggest, it's certainly going to be the best way to make sure you've got the best team coming forward. But from other points of view, even the fans in the stands, you've got to sell a ticket for a third game that might not exist. But be interesting to see how that whole thing pans out. I also want to mention, from Jim's point of view with the USA, the USA struggled for many years. And following the 2010 Olympics, I guess, in Vancouver, they started to look at changing some things. And certainly after 2014, the entire approach to how they were developing, selecting, and putting together teams changed. And that's made a vast difference to their performance at the world level in all aspects since then. Of course, Schuster winning the gold medal in 2018 in Korea. But both their men's and women's teams at the world level have been right there in the past few years. And I think it will continue in the fact that both sides have got some good depth coming up now. And they're going to be far prominent in world curling than they have been probably in the past.
And of course, this piece that was came out this past several days, Warren, is talking about, can Canada keep it up at the world level? So looking forward to hearing from you on that. John Schuster, Tabitha Peterson, Becca Hamilton, all those names we've interviewed, Kev. So great job in lining those up. If you want to go back and look at some of the other shows, you can hear those interviews. John was great. I remember when we interviewed him. Good. Funny and engaging, and got lots to say. So go back and check that out. No small event, Warren, is the Stu Sells Classic that ended Sunday in Halifax. Bring us up to date. Who are the big winners?
Well, this is an event that attracts primarily the top teams from Atlantic Canada, but there's a few others from around Canada, even the world, that do attend it. In the women's side, a familiar name, Susan Burt from Prince Edward Island, defeated Corey Hurleman from Switzerland. So Burt's the champion on that side. On the men's side, Stuart Thompson defeated Michael Fournier from Quebec. Interesting, that team, Felix Aslan, who normally throws second stones, has been throwing skip rocks, and they played most of the event with just three players. So to have only three players and end up in the final and almost win is quite an accomplishment. Anyway, Stuart Thompson was the final winner, and another great event for Stu Sells, and again, curling.com.
Kev, I think I asked you this before, but if I did, I forget your answer. When you hear this all the time about skips throwing thirds, thirds throwing final stones, did you ever do that, Kevin, on your team? I mean, you were always the skip. Was there ever a time where you stepped aside and threw the third stones?
No. We always ran our team traditionally. I guess the trick when it comes to that idea, be it with Benoit Schwartz, throwing last rocks, but actually throwing second or playing second with Team De Cruz out of Switzerland, or quite a few times where you see the person holding the broom throw third rocks and switch that way. The trick, I guess, for me is it always helped as a skip to be able to watch all the rocks come down the sheet. So I know exactly how the rocks are going to track. And I guess the worry I'd have is not being able to watch as many rocks come down the sheet. So you have a feel of it. Is the finish late? Is it, does it straighten out at any point? Is there any little tricky spot? How does it curl? You know, the speed, all those wonderful things. And you can see it a little bit better if you're either behind the other team as the skip holds the broom or holding it yourself. Whereas if you're sweeping for most of the end and then throwing, I always thought it would be more difficult. But you look at a guy like Benoit Schwartz, he makes everything. So, you know, I don't know if there's an answer to it, but we've never done it. But lots of top teams that have won a lot of things over the years have had quite a few different ways of setting up their team. I don't think there's any magic cure for it, but it's just, to me, I always like to see the line before I go to throw the rock.
As mentioned at the top of the show, Sports Interaction is one of our great sponsors. They've set up odds, you guys, for the Olympic trials starting this Friday in Saskatoon. Let's take a look at what the pros are saying. Let's start with the women. Tracy Fleury's virtually a 3-1 favorite. Carrie Anderson comes in at 3-1. Rachel Homan, 3-1. Jennifer Jones at 7-1. And then Lori Walker, 15. Kelsey Rock goes at 19-1. McCarville, 17. Casey Scheidegger at 26. And Jacqueline Harrison, they don't give her much of a chance at 52-1. Kev? What do you think of these odds, and who are you picking?
Well, I certainly agree with the Tracy Fleury odds. They've been the top team for a while here. Carrie Anderson's been struggling a lot, so 3-6-1 seems to be a little bit strong for me. I have Jennifer Jones as being second behind Tracy Fleury, and then Rachel Holman, 3, and Carrie Anderson, number 4, and Kelsey Rock, number 5, and I actually have Kelsey. You know, I like Tracy Fleury around 3. I'd say Jennifer someplace around 4, 4.5. Rachel maybe around 5, something like that. Carrie Anderson around 5.5, 6. And Kelsey Rock not far behind, maybe at 6.5, 7. And then Laura Walker around 15 and so on and so forth. So my picking's a little bit different than what we see here. So that's interesting.
I'm going Jennifer Jones. My $10 gets me 70 if we're doing the odds right. So, boy, packed field, eh? That's good. Warren, what about the men? They've got Brad Gushue, big favorite here at just over 2.5-1. Jacobs is next. Kevin Cooey, Brendan Botcher. Kev, your son's team, they're at just under 6-1. Dunstone is in there. Mike McEwen, John Epping. They've got him at 25-1. I like my money there. Gunnlaugsson is at 33-1. Tanner Horgan, who we know, is in the final spot at 43-1. What do you think of all that, Warren?
Well, I can't argue with the Gushue pick. I think he's been the hottest team out there since the start of the year. And after that game against Mowat last week, I think they have to be the favorite. I kind of look at Kevin Cooey as being right behind Gushue. They've kind of stumbled a bit a couple of times, but they've also shown a lot of brilliance. And I think they're kind of the second team right now as far as the power is concerned. Well, Jacobs and Botcher have struggled somewhat, although Jacobs did have some success early. In the last couple of events, he did have his problems. I look at Tanner Horgan. I find this an interesting one, and I think 43-1 is probably not really where he belongs if we look at his performance in the pre-trials and that team's performance. I'm not sure that team is ready to step up to the plate just yet, but they're going to give a lot of people a lot of grief, I think, in the trials. And I would certainly look at him as a dark horse. It could be around in the end. I don't think they're quite ready to win it yet, but they could certainly be close. Kevin, what do you think of the men's side?
Yeah, once again, no argument with the Gushue. Brad and company have only lost one game this entire season. So that's, you know, it's hard not to have those guys at the top. I've actually got Brad Jacobs in second spot, and I've got basically Cooey and Botcher tied at third spot. Mike McEwen got to the final of the last Olympic trials, but I don't think they're curling quite as well this year as what they did 4 years ago. So you've got, I don't know if it's fair to have them 15-1. They're probably better than that. Matty Dunstone, I think he fits in at 11. So the top four are certainly Gushue, Jacobs, Cooey, and Botcher. I kind of like Gushue number 1, Jacobs 2, Cooey and Botcher tied basically in third spot. Numbers, I'd have Jacobs a touch lower than where they are. The Cooey Botcher around 4.5, 5 seems fine to me.
Why is John Epping, the way it reads here, he doesn't have a shot at this thing?
Yeah, well, what a tough year for Team Epping. And I could be wrong here, but I think they're 13 wins and 19 losses this year. A dreadful win-loss. So that's why, Jimmy. It's been a bad year. Now, that being said, if you're betting and there's somebody who has a chance to win without any question at all, if they could find their game, that's John Epping, but they haven't been able to find it yet. And will they find it at the trials? If they do, watch out. They're good, but they haven't found it yet.
The big thing with all these teams at the trials is whoever can come out of the gate strong and whoever's going to come out with a good performance in the first couple of games gets a little momentum. They're the ones to watch. And it could be any of those people that Kevin mentioned. More so on the men's side is those top four. The women's is a little more wide open, but the top four guys, it's going to be hard to see anybody being on the winner podium except one of them, but you never know.
On to Hot Rock Topics, brought to you by Coyote Tractor, a proud partner of Team Brad Jacobs and the Grand Slam of Curling. Coyote, we dig dirt. So Warren, let's get to this. I bet we could have 50 shows on all of this, but talk about this article again. Carey Gillespie, a writer for the Toronto Star, wrote this piece called "The Three Pillars of Canadian Curling Are Wobbling. It might be time to rock the boat."
So Gillespie starts the piece by interviewing Kerry Einerson, who explains the challenge of juggling a job, a family, and high-performance curling in Canada. The key thing being a job and sponsors are essential for them to be able to compete at the top level in Canada and the world, as it is for most of the Canadian teams. The piece then switches to a discussion with Curling Canada high-performance director Jerry Peckham, who says, quote, the following, "It used to be that Canada could expect to face four or five good international teams with about a 70% possibility of defeating them. Now when we go to a World Championship or Olympics, virtually every team we play against, it's much closer to being 50-50. Spending less time competing in more high-quality training environments could be one way to be more successful. After all, that's what other countries are doing to Canada." The story then goes on to suggest even if the Canadian teams could find the time and the money, they still have to compete extensively against each other to represent Canada on the world stage. Often the time left after the Canadian standard bearer is determined gives the team involved very little time to prepare for the world event. Good example of that would be the two-month window before the Olympics, and only usually about 2 to 3 weeks before the Canadian championship, Canadian champion has to go to the Worlds. Brennan Botcher suggests as well that it would help if Canada could declare the teams to represent Canada for both the Worlds and Olympics with months to train and prepare rather than weeks. Curling Canada also suggests it knows the current system where teams are sent to take on the world after a grueling selection process is less than ideal. However, it is what makes sense to the current business model and the television partners, which that's another discussion at some point as to how this all impacts, and I fully understand it. Peckham continues again by saying, "We're going to have to hit the pause button sooner rather than later in determining whether we're going to sustain the current model or we're going to make modifications to it. Or are we going to go off in another direction because international medals mean more than anything else we are aspiring to achieve in the sport of curling in Canada?" Kevin, you read the story, comments. What do you have to say about all that?
Well, I just don't want, I wonder how tough it is to get the splinters out of Jerry Peckham's, you know what, when he sits on the fence like that. Well, he didn't, you know, he says, yeah, we got to look at this thing, but you know, it works out pretty good the way it is, but you know what, we can't wait too long. We got to get something going here. Pardon? So I think that's something that needs to be addressed is, okay, what are we going to do? I didn't hear that. The concerns, I think, are right. Certainly when it comes to Worlds and Olympics, only having a short amount of time, be it, you win the trials right at the end of November, you've got Christmas in between the trials and the Olympics. Boy, it's tight. And there's not much time for any coach. Well, it's too late for any kind of adjustment of any strategies or throwing or all these things. You know, I interviewed Bruce Mallett. Speaking of the hottest team on the planet, this year, like last year, they had a really good year. And they actually have been playing around, looking at their release and how much rotation and should they change it a little bit. It's an ongoing thing because they're already in the Olympic Games. So they're trying to just maybe get 1 or 2 more percentage higher on average in their games and they've got months to do it. Whereas a team like Botcher or Jacobs or Gushue or Jennifer Jones or you name it, Fleury, comes out of the trials and there's no time. It's all you can do is try to get everything organized so you can get to the Olympics on time, because there's just so much to do. And the World Championships are even tighter when you win the Scotties or the Brier in end of February, early March, and the Worlds is early April. It could be in some other country somewhere. Like, there's so little time. So interesting discussion. How do you set up the process of I guess, first of all, how do we decide who the high-performance teams are and how do we help them from a financial standpoint in Canada? How do we make sure that they have the time necessary to compete against the Nikodines, Silvana Terenzonis, and so on, Eve Muirheads and Bruce Mowats of the world, who are full-time curlers? That's a big discussion to have, but I would love to see the curlers involved in that discussion, as well as Jerry Peckham.
Yeah, it's very involved, and it takes on so many different tentacles. It stems back again to this whole provincial territorial system, and that's got to be addressed. But I think maybe one of the ways around this to help initially could be what I would consider a small change. On the men's and women's side going to Worlds, if you were to take the winner of the Canada Cup and send that team to the World Championship, that would give you a pretty good period of time, about three months roughly, to prepare. You could still have the Brier and Scotties continue as they are, and you would ensure that the winner of that event had a berth in the Canada Cup. So there was still an avenue for people to go in that direction if they still want to insist on keeping that system alive. And at the same time, probably the other six teams of the seven in the Canada Cup would be through ranking. And so the top teams would then have some alternatives as to how they structured their teams and really whether or not they wanted to go in a Brier or a Scotties as well. So that could maybe offer a little relief initially. I don't think it's the final answer, but it could maybe start to solve things. And as far as the Olympics are concerned, the first time this was done back in 1988, we did in fact run the trials in April. And I think it was fine, but through other pressures, it was changed to November. And I guess that's got to be the other thing they've got to address, that, I mean, Jerry very cautiously says it impacts their television and business model. And of course, I know exactly what they're saying is they want that trials event in November because of the revenue that's attached to it versus what would exist in April the year prior. So it's a very involved topic and something that's going to, I believe, require a lot of discussion, but they need to start discussing it.
Kevin, before we leave this, Kevin, you know, always in sports, there's an expression, you know, and I'm getting this sense here that I don't know. I was asking Warren last night when we were shooting the breeze, or, you know, is Canada pouting here that they're just not able to win anymore, or they've come up against it? You know, it almost sounds to me like, well, we deserve to be winning, you know, because we always have. You know, they always say, okay, did that team lose or did the other team win? And I think it sounds to me like the other teams are just winning.
Let me say to something else. It's much like hockey. For Canada to continue to have the prevalence in this country that curling has, just like hockey, if our hockey teams, curling teams, and for that matter, figure skaters, another ice sport, if those teams and athletes don't do well at the world level, the sport won't maintain the strength it's got within this country. And so it's got a very interesting tie back and forth. It's important for Canada to do well in these ice sports because that's what makes them so popular within the country. Any sport that Canada doesn't do well at the world level on doesn't have a huge amount of interest from the media or the public in the country.
All right. Good stuff. I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk about that. And I'm sure it won't be going through the week without hearing from a bunch of listeners. So we'd love to hear from you. InsideCurling@gmail.com if you want to drop us an email. Thanks a lot to Coyote Tractor for sponsoring this segment. It's really good. There's lots of hot topics that we need to get to over the coming weeks. So, and we'll keep doing that. Again, Coyote Tractor, thank you. Mailbag brought to you by Nestle Boost. This is an interesting one, fellas. Thanks a lot to Nestle Boost. Up your nutrition game with Boost. Convenient meal replacement drinks with a taste you're guaranteed to love. This email.
First of all, let me say that I think your podcast is the best thing that's happened to curling in a long time.
Wow, fantastic.
We are a group of concerned curlers in Toronto who are desperately trying to get the city to open new curling centers in our city, particularly the West End. You touched briefly on a recent podcast about Bayview, but Scarborough, Annandale, Weston, and St. George's have also recently closed. Thornhill has just revised their membership classifications, resulting in sky-high rates to curl there, and who knows what will happen next year. Unless we all work together, this will happen more and more and more across the country. We have approached the mayor, attended meetings, sent dozens of letters, started petitions, consulted counselors, everything that is needed, but we really need publicity, and I know this is where you can help us. There is nothing short of a catastrophe for the most populated area in our country. Please help us. We know you care about curling as much as we do.
Thanks again. And that's from Susan Lawrence. Kev, what do you say to all this? That doesn't sound very good, man.
Well, yeah, no, it's hard. That's terrible to hear. And thank you very much, Susan, for sending this email. Obviously, it's hard. You can tell it's heartfelt by you and your friends in Toronto and all these various curling centers. And I guess there's so much to try to talk to this. Where do we start? Well, a funding model, I guess, is one of them, being a private club versus a public facility. I think you're right, Susan. We need to open public facilities so that we can introduce new curlers to our, or new participants to our wonderful sport. That's really important. And a lot of private facilities, you know, mentioning places like St. George's and so on. I think that was a smaller club, maybe three or four sheets. But having them close, I really think we need to get a public option where you can bring schools in, young kids, and kids across the board, and not just kids that go to a country club. That's really important to be able to widen the base. And that's all sport turns out to be kind of like a pyramid. You need the very wide base so that when you get to the top players, the Kerry Anderson's of the world, that's at the top of the pyramid. But you need a very, very wide base. And the only way to do that is to get all the public involved at a young age in school, coming in, doing 6-7 weeks of curling. And that has to be an effort through not just people like Susan, but through our governing bodies, both in curling, like in Ontario with the Ontario Curling Association and the government of Ontario, as well as the federal government, to make sure that such a wonderful, it's a huge sport in our country, but it's viewed to be kind of a private sport. And we need to have it viewed more of a public sport so that we can get public dollars and the schools involved, but it's a very complex issue, but certainly participation has to increase.
I think, again, this is an issue of Susan and your group out there on your own. You don't have much clout, and that's what happens. And I think this is where the Ontario Curling Association needs to sit down with you. They need to be standing beside you. I think Curling Canada can be supportive in as many ways as they can, along with Sport Canada. And I think there's got to be some lobbying done with the City of Toronto and the various municipalities involved, but there's got to be a number of people sitting at that table to bear some fact to what you were saying. And that's needed to happen, not just in Toronto, but around this country forever. And Kevin, we've talked to clubs before where they're out there trying to do things on their own and nobody listens to things such as the cost of hydro, the cost of taxes, and other things that they're facing that, again, many other facilities, if it's a baseball diamond or a hockey rink, the people that are using those facilities aren't incurring those costs or those challenges. So again, this starts with, again, I think the associations of pulling together the curling clubs and getting together as a group and setting up a proper lobby group. If you watch around this country, that's the way most of the people get things done, is through lobbying with a powerful lobby. And that's what curling needs, and that's what's been lacking, I think, for some time.
Warren, you made a comment. Tracy Fleury's from Sudbury, where I'm from. She played her curling. She's a member of the Idlewild Golf and Country Club. And that's where I played all my golf. And I know from being back there a couple of years ago, there's a big rift between golfers and the curlers. And the golfers want the curlers out completely. Tracy had mentioned this. She touched on it, that they're in trouble. You know, they're in trouble with that. Warren, you've always said there's a huge divide at these clubs that have, you know, a golf course and curling.
Well, in many cases, it comes down to the fees that the curlers are paying versus what the golfers are paying. And I've joked before, you know, many cases across this country, you can curl for a year, probably one game a week, for this cost it might be for one one round of golf. And I think that's been a problem with curling forever. It's been severely underpriced, and we've taken pride in that over time. But I've always felt it's, to a very large degree, it's hurt us, and that we haven't charged the prices for anything that are comparable to other sports and activities. So I think that's another thing that's got to be addressed. And I know that's not easy, because when people have become accustomed to paying a certain price for something for a long time, when you come across and say, you know what, we're going to have to double that, there's going to be huge pushback and resistance. So it again comes from these big room discussions. The curling world has to start to get everybody in one room, get their heads together, and start talking about all these things if we have any slight chance of maintaining the numbers that the sport has had in Canada over the years, because they're dwindling. And again, I know there's lots of clubs that are doing really well, but there's a reason for that as well, but there's lots that are really hurting.
Well, Susan Lawrence, thanks very much for that email. Keep pounding the drum, and we'll do what we can. But it sounds like it's not exclusive to the Toronto area, that it's happening around the rest of the country. So we'll do all we can. Thanks a lot. And thank you to Nestle Boost for sponsoring the email segment. We want to keep it going, and we'd love to hear from you. Next, we got an interview, Kev, coming up. Kathy Overton, Kathy O, not only a fantastic curler, but now into the coaching ranks, and we're going to talk to her. Stick around. Goldline curling equipment can be found in pro shops and curling stores all around the world. Plus, there are retail stores in Calgary, London, Scarborough, Mississauga, and they've got two stores in Ottawa. Goldline can be found at every Grand Slam of curling event and online anytime at goldlinecurling.com. Kathy Overton, welcome to the show, Kathy. You're currently in Omaha, Nebraska at the U.S. Olympic Trials coaching Team Christensen. You know, I was reading up on you last night, Kathy, and I've got to say, you have as many accolades as anybody who's come out of Manitoba, multiple medals and awards that you've won and events. But now you're coaching, Kathy. Tell me how you went from curling to coaching. Was it what that decision was to hang it up as a curler? Did they find you as a coach, or did you find teams?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I listen to your podcast always, and they're great. Yeah, I guess just being on tour, seeing teams, you know, hanging around the U.S. Coaching staff. Back when I first came on board, Derek Brown was the director of the U.S. teams. And, you know, we chatted a little bit, and it just kind of went on from there.
And how's it going?
It's going well. I started off coaching Team Sinclair, that had the same members on the team that I'm currently working with now. This is my third season with them. Obviously, with COVID, times are really tough there for everyone, and particularly me seeing them with the COVID going on. So the last 6 months, we've spent a lot of time together and working towards this week.
Although I claim to be a fantastic curler, let's get to the real curlers who are going to want to talk to you. Kevin, go ahead.
Well, thanks, Kathy, for coming on. It's great to talk to you, and I will be seeing you in a day or so in Omaha, getting ready to do the finals. And it's, you know, you guys are looking pretty good. You're at 4-2 right now. I guess first question is your thoughts on your team's performance so far. You're right in the hunt.
Yeah, you know, we started off strong. The girls played really well. Had a tough game against Team Peterson. I don't think the score was indicative of how the game was. We gave up a 4, could have been 2, you know how curling goes. But and today struggled just a little bit. But, you know, overall, they're playing really well. I feel like Corey's got a really good handle on the ice. And right now they're just worrying about them and trying to pull out wins. So the ice is fantastic. The facility is amazing. And, yeah, they're enjoying being out on the ice right now.
Before I let Warren in, because I know he's got lots to ask you, but I'd like to hear about your coaching, because you've played many different positions at a world level. You've been an analyst on NBC. Your involvement in the sport of curling has been incredible on all fronts. And I guess I just want to hear from behind your thoughts on, I guess, why the direction of coaching, but just why did you decide to get into it?
Well, I love the game. I love watching the game. I felt that I've had a pretty successful career, and I still feel that I can still share some learning experiences that I've learned, some do's and don'ts. And, you know, Team Christensen is a super keen team. They want to learn, they want to be better. And, you know, we're working together to try to do that. And I love the game so much. So I wanted to still be involved, and I'm enjoying it.
Kathy, let's talk a little bit about women's curling in the USA and certainly the Corey Christensen team. And kind of interesting that Corey and two other members of your team were playing with Jamie Sinclair 2 years ago. And I kind of wondered when that whole thing happened. I watched Corey for a couple of years prior with my involvement down there and thought she was a very strong potential skip going forward. And I kind of wondered when she went to play third for Jamie, and I'm assuming that was probably part of the problem, that she just didn't feel comfortable as a third, as more of a skip. Is that part of the issue there? What took place there?
Yeah, so it was actually a five-man team. So this team, the four members with Jamie, you know, we rotated through some events to try to find the best team dynamic in what we could with the five players. And yeah, it was a new role for Corey, for sure. She's been a skip her whole life. And I do think that it's obviously a different and a unique position to play. And when you're kind of been the leader of the team for your whole playing career, it's difficult to step into that role. And I can't speak for her, but I will say it was a different spot for her. And I think her position is to skip, and she shines when she's doing that. So I think it just wasn't suited for her.
So I think that there's three teams there in the U.S. that are all very potential to be contenders at the world level, which is Peterson, Christensen, and Sinclair. What's your thoughts on those three teams? Do you think they're all really able to take on teams at the world level?
I do. I know Jamie's team is a new team this year, but I know they're working really hard preparing for this week as well. And obviously Tab's team is a great team. They've had a lot of success, and I think their performance at the World Championship last year and grabbing that bronze medal really has you know, opened the door for the other US teams, you know, to strive to get there as well. And I think the US teams play each other a fair bit. So, you know, they see them often, they're in the gym together, you know, they're at the practice facility. So they're seeing it and they're, you know, thriving off what they've done. And I do think that they're, you know, equal. I think anybody can win this week.
Kathy, I can ask you a question. There was an article that came out for the Toronto Star by Carrie Gillespie. I guess the essence of the article was, how is Canada going to continue to compete at the high level? That some of it is there's just no time for them to prepare was one of the topics in this article. You're now involved in a team in the U.S. Do you see stuff that's done in the U.S. that maybe Canada is lacking that they could do?
Yeah, I think every country's program is different in how they work with their athletes. And curling's tough now. The countries are really good, and I think it's just how the teams need to train and what they need to do to try to be better and to try to get better every year.
You know, you bring up a great point that curling is tough now. It is. And the athletes are getting so young. And you have, your team is a very young skip. And this is one thing I want to ask you today. How do we get a young skip like Corey to, I guess, mentally be ready to throw that last one, either to have the opportunity to go to the Olympic Games in Beijing, or when you actually get there? Corey's a really good, talented player, I believe, and could be in a position where to win a medal, she has to somehow reach deep at such a young age. I guess, how do we build our athletes so that the talent is there, but how do we build it quick enough on the mental side, Kathy?
Yeah, it's funny you asked that, Kevin. I was just talking about this the other day. The U.S. national team is really fortunate. They work with a great sports psychologist. And I feel sometimes you can give all the sports psychology you want, but until you experience those big games, those big moments over and over again, it's tough. You got to put yourself in the position that you feel that you can do it. You know you can do it, and just go out and do it. I think a lot of the young players right now, it's all about overthinking and forgetting about the moment you're presently in. But it's hard to teach that. You got to play in those big games, and it's hard to get in those big games.
Let's switch gears a bit and have a technical discussion. Let's talk about sweeping. And particularly as it pertains to the women's game today, you as a coach, on the men's side, we see a lot of discussion and a lot of things happening with carving, and we see some pretty interesting things happening with some of these sweepers that are very strong. And over on the women's side, we see it happening, but I'm not sure, what is the impact that on the women's side with the carving? Do you feel that they're able to be effective? And what's your thoughts overall about the way sweeping is happening today with the directional stuff taking place?
Well, I did think it had an impact until a couple of weeks ago when the slam was on and Kevin said he didn't think it had any impact. So I'm seeing different techniques in the last couple of months, which is interesting. You know, it's crazy to watch Brad Thiessen and Kark do it because I think, you know, they're beasts out there and I do think that they're doing something. But I watched a little bit of Rachel's team. They changed their technique at the last slam, I noticed, and they could have been doing it earlier and I just didn't pay too much attention to it. But theirs is a slow, more of an angle. And I did see a difference there as well. And I did see Team Jones doing that as well. So I haven't studied any of the sweeping. I was never really a good sweeper, so I'm not going to get into that too much. But obviously, the teams have been doing some research on it and practicing it. I'm not 100% sure, but I will tell you, watching this week right on the sheet, behind the sheet, I do think it's making a difference.
So do you believe this is something that should continue, should be improved, should it be part of the game? What's your thoughts about it all?
I don't like it. I've always been about a pure throw. You don't throw good, you're not making the shot.
Kevin, I never probably asked you exactly, what's your take on it? Do you think it's something that should be improved upon, become more scientific and be part of the game, or does it need to be looked at?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Kathy on that part. I don't remember saying that I don't think that the carving actually makes any difference, but Kathy, but
you did. You go back and watch.
Put him in his place, Kathy. Don't listen to his crap.
We'll check the tape.
Gee, I tell you what, exactly. Yeah. Well, maybe one certain sweeper on some team that wasn't
doing
much
it. Yeah.
Maybe. And I probably said it in some way. I was trying to be nice and not be mean like you were just to me. But anyway, I agree with Kathy that I think that it's a thrower's game. I really think sweeping should help the thrower make shots, but we might have maybe got a little bit too far down this road, and we're relying more on sweeping and more yelling of straight, curl, curl, straight, curl, clean, you know, and instead of yes or no, or hurry or whoa. But how do you turn back the clock? And that I don't know. I don't know how, once this is started, as long as the person sweeps across the face of the stone, I don't know how you can possibly stop it from happening, but I agree with you, Kathy. I'd rather see it be a thrower's game than a sweeper's game.
So the Canadian trials start on Saturday. Who do you think the favorites are on both the men's and women's side at this stage?
You can't count out the Gushu, Cooley, Botcher, Jacobs. It's tough. The Horgan young team, I think they're a great young team, and they're going to turn some heads at the event too. And Dunstone, I mean, if he gets on that roll that he was on at the Briar, it's going to be tough. And I don't know. I think it's going to be a crapshoot, to be honest with you. But obviously the favorites going in I would say Gushu, Cooley, Botcher, coming off his, you know, Canadian championship last year. And yeah, I don't know. It's tough. What do you guys say about the men?
They went very easy and just picked the favorite.
Well, I think we agreed Gushu probably at this stage because of the year he's had. Women's side much more wide open, I believe, than probably the men's side.
The women's side to me is interesting because there's a few teams that haven't played in a trials before. You know, Flurries had a phenomenal year, but no trials experience. Anderson's team... it's only Val has had trials experience. You can never count out Jones. You know, she's always there at the end. And Holman hasn't had a great year, but I would never count them out either. I think by not hitting the podium at the last Olympics, I think they're probably just as hungry to get back and try to get on that podium. So the women's is going to be interesting.
you know what? You've given me thought for a new segment. And what it is, Kathy O is going to tell us things Kevin Martin said but claimed he didn't say.
Listen, guys, I'm going to spend after my game tonight finding that game. And I'm going to send it to you guys. It was a woman's game, I'm pretty sure.
I'm glad to hear you take him on. I always get nervous about trying to take on Kevin. Good for you. Good for you.
Well, thanks for having me, and you guys do a great job on the podcast. So thanks for all of us out here, listeners.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Good luck.
Kev, time to move along. I remember this story. You haven't told it in a long time. And I think it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. It's fantastic. We call this Story Time, brought to you by Meridian. Meridian Manufacturing, your industrial and on-farm storage and handling partners and proud sponsor of the Grand Slam of Curling. Kev, yeah, give us the story again. This was absolutely great.
Because, you know, the Olympic trials is on in Omaha, I thought it would be fitting to tell a story from 2002 at the Olympic Games in Salt Lake City. And how it works when you, at least, now that was right after 9/11, of course, in 2001, right? So it's right after that in February of 2002. So we had a orientation day in Calgary. So all of the Canadian athletes and Canadian team got together in Calgary. And then we take off in two aircraft, heading down to Salt Lake all at one time. So that was cool. So we're off to Salt Lake and we get there about, I don't know, 7 o'clock, 6:30 at night, something like that. But then we have to get our accreditation. So we're in these lines and all this stuff. And we get through there about 9:30, 10 o'clock. We finally get to the village. And like good Canadians, we want to, we snuck some bottles in, of course, so we could have
a drink, man.
First get to the village. We're not curling for about, oh boy, this is about 5 days before the Olympics even, or 3 days before the Olympics even started. And then curling wasn't on for quite a ways into the Olympics. We're probably 10 days from throwing a curling stone. So we get there, get to the village, and it's great. You know, it's sponsored, of course, by Coca-Cola and Sprite. So that's perfect. So we sneak the bottles in. We got mix, tons of it, unlimited amount. But as you know, Jimmy, in order to have a cocktail, what do you need? You need a glass.
Well, if you're asking me, you need about three more bottles than what you just mentioned. You got to have ice, man. You
got
to have the
ice. You got to have ice. So, there's no ice machines. So there's no ice machine, but of course we can't have cocktails without ice. So Walchuk, where in the heck are we going to be able to get any ice? And he thinks, well, the only place you get ice cubes at an Olympics is going to be the doctors, of course. They'll have ice, they'll have bags of ice for, yeah, muscle strains and injuries and all that kind of stuff. But the plane just landed. There's no time for people to get injured yet. But anyway, so let's give it a try. So Walchuk and I walk downstairs to the doctors and knock, knock, knock on the door. And this nice fella, doctor, comes out and, well, what do you need, you guys? Well, I've got the wall check. I've got this pulled groin muscle and it's, you know, it's hurting a lot. I need some ice. So the doctor, you know, goes and gets a small little baggy ice. Well, there's got to be, I don't know how many of us, two curling teams. There's some of the women's hockey team, some of the hockey coaches. There's probably 20 of us in the room ready to have a drink. So Walchuk looks at this little baggie of ice. And goes, well, that's not big enough. No, no, no. It's a big muscle tour. I got a big groin pull here. I need a good big bag of ice. So the doctor, oh, geez. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So he runs into the back and grabs a great big bag of ice. And Walchuk, perfect. So it kind of limps away until the doctor shuts the door. And then we race upstairs. So we're all good. We're all mixing up drinks. We got ice for everybody. This is fantastic. We're at the Olympic Games. It's wonderful. We're sitting back, relaxing. Perfect. And knock on our door. So we open up the door. Five doctors come to the door because this is the first injury of the Olympics. They got to really look after this guy that's got this torn groin muscle. And so the doctors walk in and they look around the room and everybody in this great big circle all has a glass with ice in it. And they start laughing like crazy. And Dr. Dave, I forget Dave's last name. And if Dave could send me an email, I'd appreciate it. I just can't remember his name and I apologize for that. But it's quite a few years ago, almost 20 years ago. But Dr. Dave, a red-haired fella, really nice guy. He was just howling. He was beside himself. It was so funny. And every day for the rest of the Olympic Games, there was a white cooler with a green lid, I'll never forget, inside of our door with ice in it for the rest of the entire Olympics.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. I love that story. I could hear it every day. Did you steal the idea, Kev, when you went to Vancouver in 2010?
Well, they might have been onto us by then. Well, we have another story. We got another story for story time about Vancouver and housing there. We'll do that another time.
Save that for another time. Yeah. I don't know if we can top that one. What a great show. You guys, another one in the books. And we appreciate all you fans who are listening to the show and writing in and participating and dropping us emails and weighing in on the Facebook group. Also, we're reaching out to curling clubs if you want. We had a great discussion about those clubs in Toronto that are struggling away. If you want to do a Zoom call with us, we'd love to do it. Get a hold of us. Also to Rod Paulson, we want to thank Rod, his company, In-House Strategies, for all the great work he's doing on our Facebook page and our Facebook group. And remember, you can email us insidecurling@gmail.com on anything you like. Keep it short though, right? If you want us to read it on air. This Friday, the Canadian men's and women's Olympic trials will be taking place in Saskatoon. Also, we heard from our friend John Killoran in Vegas to remind all Canadians that the border to the U.S. is now open, and he's really looking forward to seeing many of us in the first weekend of April at the Men's Worlds. John tells us as well to watch for a big ticket announcement at the end of this week. Check out all of this at LasVegasCurling.rocks. Fellas, well done. Another show in the books. Kev, good luck down there. You're working for NBC this week, aren't you?
Yep, working for NBC. Looking forward to it. It's going to be great. I'm really excited about this new playoff structure, best 2 out of 3. Should be interesting. Can't wait to talk to you guys about it when it's over.
And Warren, you stay safe out there. Not a great story in BC, but we don't want you to lose yourself out there, Warren, with all this stuff. You're not affected, though, Warren, you said, by it?
No, where I am is fine. I live on a slope, so unless it washes away. But we're fine. But the sun's shining today, and I hope it stays that way for a while after the 3 days we had this weekend, where I've lived here for nearly 40 years, and I've never witnessed anything like the 3 days we had this weekend. So it was extraordinary.
Well, those of us at Inside Curling want to wish everyone good luck with that. It can't be. It was just a shock when I read it all this morning, and we give everyone our condolences and hope everything gets back to normal. Fellas, you have a good week. Take it easy, everybody. You've been listening to Inside Curling, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jimmy.